can see you better.
Is there anyone here who doesn't understand English?
I have to ask this in Greek.
Ask in Greek. I think everyone speaks English.
Well, you're not sure. I saw a hand that looked like... Ask in Greek. Somebody asked that question in Greek.
We're okay.
We're okay with English? That makes my life easier. Om Agyana Tuniram Tasya Janam Vira Shavakaya Chakshurin Minitam Dena Tasvai Shri Gurudevam Shri Chaitanya Mano Pistam Stapitam Jena Putile Hayam Rupa Pada Mayam Tapati Shapadatika. Let's do a couple of things. Let's do a cell phone check. Cell phones can all be silent or vibrating or whatever it is, something like that. You're going to drive me batty with that. Cameras in the pockets. Okay. Then I think we're ready. I was asked to speak this evening about reincarnation. I think the basic ideas you all know, how the consciousness travels from one body to the next, is something I should introduce or something you're familiar with, I think. Give me a little feedback. Familiar?
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought so.
Some people
need a little... intro. Okay. I'm going to give a little intro and get into some of the more, I guess, esoteric, more detailed discussion of how things go on. The basic idea is first to understand that I'm not the body, because the body is always changing. I have a child's body, I have a young man's body, I have an old man's body. Through those different changes, body is completely changing. All the cells are being replaced, wind up with a new body every few years. But the consciousness within the body is the same. Not the content of the consciousness, but you as the perceiver of what's going on are the same you. You don't wake up in the morning and find out that you're perceiving what's going on in someone else's body. You're still in your body perceiving what's in there. Just as in this apartment, we're perceiving what's in here. And if we go to the next apartment, we'll perceive what's there. But I'll be the same person, even though I'm moving from one apartment to the next. Or if I'm changing my clothes, take off this set, put on another set, I remain the same person, even though my clothing has changed. In a similar way, I'm the consciousness wearing a body. And that body is changing. Throughout my life, I'm changing bodies. And what we call death means another change of body. That at death, the consciousness doesn't disintegrate or cease to exist, but it travels to the next body. And we'll discuss what kind of next body that might be. These things are discussed in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter. And then it comes up again in the 15th chapter, where there's a little bit more discussion of the how it works, how the Atma soul, consciousness, whatever word you like, how it travels from one body to the next. So we'll get into that a little bit here. Shariram yadavapnoti yachchapyutkramati shuraha grihitvaitani sangyati vayurgantani vashya. This is Bhagavad Gita, for those who may not be familiar. Say, 5,000-year-old Sanskrit text on the science of spiritual understanding, spoken by Lord Krishna to his friend and disciple, Arjuna. And here it's presented with the original Sanskrit, how it's spoken, word-for-word meaning, a translation, and a commentary by my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we're publishing it in English, Greek, about 60 other languages. So, shariram yadavapnoti yachchapi utkramati shivaha grihitvaitani sanyati vayur gantan ivashayat. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. It's helpful here to understand that we actually are wearing two bodies. We're wearing two bodies, that a gross body and a subtle body. Just as you might wear a shirt and a coat, so we have the subtle body and the gross body. The gross body is the one that you see, the machinery that we all see. And the subtle body, well, we can get a little more into the gross body. The gross body consists of earth, water, fire, air, and space. Nothing exists without space. You need space for everything. So, earth, solid part, the bones and so on. Water, I think the body's mostly water. Earth, water, fire, digestion is there, temperature is there. Air is circulating throughout the body. And then there's space holding the whole thing together. That's called the gross body. Then, there's a subtle body consisting of mind, intelligence, and the false sense of identity. These are called subtle elements. Even the gross elements start from the most gross and go to the most subtle. Like earth is very tangible. It's solid. Water gets a little more fluid, and it's also it has no smell. Pure water has no smell. Earth always has a smell to it, an aroma. Water has no smell. Then when you get, but water has taste. The earth also has taste. Water has taste. When you get to fire, there's no smell and there's no taste. Then, earth, water, fire, air. Now there's in the air, pure air. There's no taste. There's no smell. And there's no form. Fire you can see, it has a form. Air is more subtle. It doesn't have a form. Earth, water, fire, air. What are we missing in air? Yes, air has no form. Fire, I'm getting lost in my elements here. Earth, water, fire. Fire has no fire, there's touch. And air has touch. But what's missing?
Ether.
Ether is the next one. Sound, touch, smell.
Air has no form.
Air has no form. Okay, so I'm right. Okay. I'm accusing myself of sins I haven't committed. Okay. Then we finally get to ether, and there's just sound. That's the only thing that's left. It's still more subtle. Sky or ether. It's ethereal. That's the most subtle of the gross elements. Then you get to mind. Mind is more subtle. Very subtle. Of course, it can't be seen. But exactly where is it? It's a subtle thing. Mind. It can do all sorts of things. It affects the body. You're in a bad mood. You don't feel like eating. Or your digestion is spoiled because you're cranky. Mind has powers. Even the yogis can do things just by their minds. Even ordinary people, the people who have studied parapsychology, find that there's a little statistical effect. If I had, say, a big machine with lights on it, and the lights are going clockwise, and they're going clockwise in accordance with, oh, the disintegration of atoms of uranium or something like that. They've done experiments where they'll sit you down and ask you to try to make the lights go in the opposite direction. And assert to a certain little bit, statistically, you'll be able to do it. Not 100%, but statistically significant percentage. So the mind can do things like that. Mind, more parapsychology. They find that people just by their minds can sometimes see things in the next city. Just by mind. We could talk about the mind all day. There's all sorts of things that go on in the mind. But the main business of the mind is accepting something and rejecting something. So, say I walk past a store and I see something. Oh, a new iPod. I say, wow, that's really nice. I'd really like to have that. Nah, I don't think I need it. Pretty nice, though. I have too many material things. One more wouldn't hurt. It goes back and forth, back and forth. That's the mind. Flips and flops and flops and flips. That's what the mind does. Accepting and rejecting. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. What's the intelligence about? Intelligence mainly has your analytical capability. Could I afford a new iPod? How much stretched am I already on my credit card? Could I get it cheaper someplace else? Should I wait for the next model to come out? And so many other questions. I'll go through the whole thing, analyze it, and at the end, I'll make a decision. Yes, I'm going to buy it. No, I'm going to wait or forget about it. And then it's a fixed decision. Because when I've used my intelligence, it's no longer. Well, now the intelligence has analyzed it, and I've made a decision. So intelligence is higher than the mind, and therefore it's meant to direct the mind. Okay, mind, we decided this, we're going to stick with it, okay? Intelligence. Then there's something still higher and more subtle than the intelligence. That's called, in Sanskrit, ahamkar. It's the false sense of self. We discussed that I'm not the body. I'm eternal spiritual force within the body. But I'm identifying with this body. I'm thinking I'm this body. You ask me who I am, I say I'm Smith or I'm Jones. Or I say I'm John or I'm Custos, right? Whoever I think I am. I say I'm a man. I say I'm a woman. I say I'm young. I say I'm old. I think in terms of the body as being who I am. I look in the mirror, I say, oh, I'm getting old. Although, that's not me. But I'm identifying with this body. I'm identifying with this body. That means the spiritual force is identifying with the material energy. The eternal energy is identifying with the temporary energy. The superior is misidentifying with the inferior substance. That's called false ego, the false sense of self. False sense of self. And that false sense of self is the meeting place of matter and spirit, or of consciousness and the material energy. The two actually have nothing to do with one another. Spirit has no connection with matter. Matter has no connection with spirit. Two separate things. But when I identify myself with matter, I become connected by thought, by consciousness. Just to give a gross example, there's all this money sitting in the bank, and I'm thinking that $100 of it is mine. The connection is only by thought. It's all sitting there. The bank is doing whatever it wants. It might not even be there for all I know. But I'm identifying that this is my money. Similarly, I'm identifying, this is my sister, this is my brother, this is my son, this is my daughter, this is my mother, this is my father. By thought. Because if I'm not this body, then I don't really have a substantial connection with this person, this person, this person, this person, in terms of the body. But I'm imagining, as it were. I'm imagining that I'm getting old. I'm imagining that I'm dying. The Vedic literature gives the example of a man seeing his head cut off in a dream. Horrible. But if you can see your head cut off, you must be okay. So our position is like that. We're going through all the troubles of the material world. But actually, I have nothing to do with any of these things. Because I'm not part of the material world. But because I'm misidentifying myself with matter, I'm connected with matter. And when I properly identify myself as spirit, and I redirect my sense of self, then I'm free from that. That's the idea. Now, here Krishna is talking about the person who has not yet reached that stage of freeing himself from material identification. And he's carrying his ideas with him in his mind. He's carrying with him his sense that I'm this and I'm that, I'm American or I'm German or I'm Italian or I'm South American. I'm the son of such and such. And he's carrying with him his desires. I want to live in California. I want to live on one of the islands. I want to this, I want that. His thoughts, his feelings, his desires, they're all in that subtle body. Gross body doesn't think. The hand doesn't think, I'd like to raise. The mind thinks, hand up. And so the hand goes up. Gross body doesn't do any thinking. The subtle body is always busy thinking, feeling, desiring. So here, he's carrying those conceptions The subtle body is carrying those conceptions. As the wind is, as the air is carrying aromas. The aromas actually have nothing to do with the air. The air is beyond all that. The air is not, it blows over a rose garden and it picks up the scent of roses. It blows over the garbage pit and it picks up the scent of garbage. The air itself doesn't smell like garbage, doesn't smell like roses, doesn't have a smell. But it's picking these up. So we're picking up these material conceptions and carrying them with us. And really holding on to them too. And identifying ourselves with all of these thoughts and all of these whatever it is. Now, Krishna says, Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam pranam eva cha adhishtaya manas chayam vishayan upasevate. The living being picks up now a particular kind of a set of senses. We have our senses. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and sense of touch. These are the five organs for, they're called knowledge gathering senses. We gather knowledge through our eyes, through our ears, knowledge of what things taste like with our tongue, what things feel like. These are knowledge gathering senses. Then there are active senses, the arms, the legs, the tongue again for speaking, the anus and the genitals. These are active senses. They do things. So these 10 senses. So Krishna says, we pick up a set of 10 senses, because body means the senses. If you take birth as an eagle, you'll get an eagle eye. You can see for miles down. If you get, a bat's body, you won't be able to see anything. But you'll have radar. Oh, you'll get a certain set of sense, and you get wings too. Handy, goes with the radar. So everybody gets a certain set of senses according to the body. And where do we? What determines which senses I'm going to get? What's in my mind? What's in my mind is what's going to carry me to the next body. Or the way Krishna puts it here, the senses gather around the mind. It's as if the mind is like pulling together or attracting a certain set of senses. They say if you walk against the red light, you'll attract a fine. It's expressed that we attract a fine. So if we have a certain kind of consciousness, we'll attract a certain set of senses. And so it's our consciousness that's creating the next body. Our consciousness and the activities we've performed during this life and even previous lives that have brought us to this consciousness. So in one sense it's up to us what body we're getting. Not exactly up to us that we fill in a form or snap our fingers and we say, I think I'd like that one. Yes, sir. It's not in our control. But it's somewhat in our control because it depends on what we think of. I was just thinking about different examples. You see these really... distinct species of life, and you think, what was he thinking? They're like a penguin. And maybe they were guys who wanted to attend one of those formal parties with dinner. Or the zebras, you know, really sharp dressers. Or the pigs, they have a different sort of mentality. Eat anything, sort of lie in the mud all day. That's somebody's idea of having a good time. So we're attracting these different kinds of bodies. Utkramantam stitam vapi punjanam vagunambitam vimutha nanupashanti pashanti gana chakshusha. Utkramantam stitam vapi. How the living being is staying in a particular body, how he's moving to the next body. Punjana. Punjana means enjoying. The basic principle of material life, the basic principle of our existence here, is that we're trying to enjoy. And everyone has a different idea about what enjoyment is. Like in food. One man's food is another man's poison. The chickens are what? They're eating gravel even? It helps their digestion or something? If somebody asks us to eat gravel, we're not going to do that. The all sorts of things that a snake might eat or a lizard might eat, we might not want to eat. The things that... Well, pig again, he always comes to mind. Someone's excreting is the pig's eating. But none of the human beings in Athens are going to go to a restaurant and say, "Excuse me, do you have some?" But for the pig, that's enjoyment. And the pig wouldn't want to have what we have. And the pig gets, from his point of view, as much enjoyment as we get. He's enjoying, you see the pigs, in India there's lots of pigs in the villages. And you see them, you know, in their, some mucky place, with these enormous smiles. Just enormous. That means they're enjoying. But you look at it and say, yuck. So the whole material world, everyone is enjoying, but that enjoyment is a kind of imagination. We imagine this is enjoyable, that's enjoyable. Gunanditam. Gunanditam means according to the three modes of nature. You're familiar with these modes of nature? In the Bhagavad Gita, it's analyzed that there are three qualities. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. In goodness, there's calmness, there's clarity, there's thoughtfulness, there's balance, philosophical nature, contentment. In passion, there's intense endeavor, greed, desire, hankerings and longings, and action to get the things that I want. People are busy, I gotta have it, Working to fulfill their desires and needs and wants. It's passion. Conquering empires, or whatever it may be. And ignorance, dull, stupid, sometimes crazy, that's also part of ignorance, mad, drunk, confused, that's quality of ignorance. In the material world, all the living beings are affected. It's as if we've picked up these three modes, become infected by them in different proportions. Someone's really good, but gets a little passionate sometimes. Sometimes really passionate, but it's got a little good side to it. Someone's passionate, but a little good side to them, and a little of the, well, I don't know, side to them. They mix like colors. You have the three primary colors, and then they make hundreds of other colors. So you have these three qualities, and they mix in different proportions, and they give you all sorts of permutations. And it's under these different qualities that we pick up, I really want this. Personally, in the mode of ignorance, he really wants a Jack Daniels. You know, he really wants some whiskey. Or he really just wants to sleep for all day. The person in the passion wants to get ahead, wants to achieve, wants to enjoy. And the person in the goodness wants to read a book, wants to think, wants to get away from madness, busy, busy world, have a peaceful situation. Different qualities are there, and they're mixing up in different ways. And accordingly, you see all sorts of people with all sorts of natures. And these natures that we've picked up, because of our connection with matter, which is because of our false sense of who we are, is pulling us to our next path. Those who are in goodness are elevated. They get a better, more refined life. There are higher parts of the universe, the Bhagavad Gita says, higher planets. Those in goodness may go there and live for very long lifetimes with powers of the yogis, that sort of thing. Those in passion generally stay here in this human society. And those in ignorance, down to animal life, tree life, down. We're creating our next body. According to the qualities that we picked up and that we cultivate, according to the thoughts that we develop. Vimutha nanupashanti. Pashanti gyanachakshut. Mutha means fools. And vimutha means big fools. Vimutha, the big fools, Krishna says, can't see this. They don't see what's happening. Na anupashanti. Anupashanti means seeing life far away. The intelligent person sees not just by seeing, but by hearing. He hears from those who are wiser than he, who know more than he, who have deeper understanding than he. He sees through books of knowledge. He sees through the eyes of saintly people who have spiritual vision. It's called anupashanti, seeing by following. Seeing by following. Well, big fools don't see that way. Pashanti jnana chakshusha. And who sees? Those who have eyes of knowledge. Jnana chakshusha means eyes. Jnana means knowledge. Those who have eyes of knowledge, just a simple example. The Queen of England might walk in the room, and I'd have no idea who she is. To me, she just looks like another lady. A little older. But nobody special. Because there's... Queens look like everybody else. Two eyes, two nose, two ears. But if somebody says, this is the Queen of England, some person who's in authority, and they're saying, this is, Your Majesty, I'm honored. Because I'm seeing by hearing. Now I'm seeing with eyes of knowledge. The same woman Now that I know that she's the queen, I see it differently. Of course, I don't care, queen or no queen, but in ordinary affairs, I see by eyes of knowledge. So spiritually also, seeing is not just by seeing. Can you show me? I want to see. Seeing is with eyes of knowledge. This Bhagavad Gita is spoken to give us eyes of knowledge, spiritual vision, spiritual perception. Yatanto yoginas jainam pashyanti atmanyavastitam yatanto api akritatmano nainam pashyanti chetasara. Those who are yatanta means endeavoring. What kind of endeavoring? Yatanto yoginas jainam. Those who are endeavoring for spiritual realization. Yogis, those who are connected. Those who are connected with the spiritual reality. Yatanto yoginas jainam. Pashanti. They can see. Atmanyavastitam. Those who are self-realized. Those who know, I'm not this body, I'm the spiritual self within the body. They can see. Yatanto apyakritatmano. But those who are not self-realized, even though they may also endeavor, they can't see. Nainam pashyanti acetasaha. Those who are not self-realized, those who are whose minds are not refined, cultivated. Those who are dull, those who are thinking that the body is the self, they won't be able to see these things. They won't be able to see. Now the Bhagavad Gita is meant to help us see what we can't see just by looking. It's meant to help us see what's actually going on in the background of our life. We're seeing in terms of 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, one lifetime. I'm going to go to college, and I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to get married, and I'm going to get a da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, and then I'm going to die. And then what comes after that? Where do I go? Generally, there's no vision. You don't go to school and hear, well, after you worked and built up your career and got married and had a family, then you're going to die, and then what are you going to do? That's not there. Grade school, high school, college even. It's not discussed. Career, or it's all about your career. What's going to be your subject? What's going to be your career? Well, my career is I'm going to get old and die. And then I'm going to take another body. Or, if I develop my spiritual consciousness to the highest point, to the real point, then I don't have to take another body. The yogis who link with the Supreme, go to the Supreme. Those of us who link with matter will have to come back for another lifetime with matter. Because of that false identification, I come back to what I've identified with. But if I identify myself with spirit, and if I identify myself in connection with the Supreme, I go to the Supreme. So Krishna is speaking in the Bhagavad Gita as the personality of the Supreme, and he's recommending that we connect ourselves with him, with that supreme personality of Godhead, with supreme reality, the supreme truth, not with the appearance of truth in the material world, the shadow of truth, the reflection of truth, but actually with the truth. So Krishna is speaking as that supreme truth and giving knowledge, eyes of knowledge, by which we can understand our actual position. And as it said, solve the problems of life. The problem of life is not that the euro crashed. That's not the problem. Problems of life are birth, death, disease, and old age. Those are the real problems. And those problems are brought about by my identification with this body, with that seeing my head cut off in the dream. How do you solve the problem of seeing your head cut off in a dream? You wake up. The problem's over. So this mantra meditation is meant to awaken us to our spiritual consciousness, to our natural consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So that we'll see everything that we're seeing now, but with eyes of knowledge. And that changes the way we see everything. Okay, I've talked enough, maybe, so you have some questions. Yeah.
You said the yogis, when they reach the divine consciousness, they stay up.
Mm.
Don't they come back to teach more? I mean, or do they?
If they do, that's voluntary.
Is it? I mean,
yeah. Just like, yeah, it is. It is. If the self-realized souls descend from the spiritual world to this world, it's not because they're forced to. It's because they have compassion, because they want to. Not because there's something here for them. The person under the influence of illusion imagines that there's something here that I'm really going to enjoy, that's really going to make me happy. And so he gets entangled in things that are not going to make him happy, like the body itself. The body itself is my vehicle for happiness, but how much misery it gives. So the self-realized souls who come are not looking for something here to make them happy. They're looking to bring us out of that illusion. They're free, and they want to enable us to become
more people with them.
Yeah, they're the rescue squad.
Why
is all this here?
They come to rescue somebody from here, but why is this here? The rescue squad
comes to drag us out. But why is this here? Uh-huh. It's here because we imagine it to be enjoyable for us.
Who is we?
We means that you're a spiritual living being. Within the mind, within the gross body, within the subtle body, there's the actual self, which we can say that's who I really am.
Yes, but why this actual self needs to imagine that he's here when he's already there?
No good reason.
No.
There's no good reason for him to imagine that. It's simply his, what would you say, misuse of his freedom. Yeah, I have freedom. I can open the window and look out, or I can open the window and jump over. I have freedom. If I use it properly, I'll see the beautiful view. If I misuse it, I'll be part of the beautiful view.
Can you think if here was not needed, it would be here?
Excuse me?
I don't think that the universe or whatever it is called, the material stuff, if not needed...
It's not needed.
If it was not needed.
If it was not needed, it wouldn't be here. Right. It's kind of like prison. Prison's not really needed. I mean, I don't need prison. Who needs prison? It's not someplace that's really great. But some people say, well, I think I'd like to rob the bank.
Yes, but we are talking the material world, that people have bad traits. In a spiritual world, people would have only perfect traits.
Right.
They wouldn't stay, they wouldn't be in prison.
Right, right.
So how they...
Therefore it's said that the souls in this world are eternally conditioned. No one can trace out a time when we were in the spiritual reality. And at that time said, I don't know about being up here. I think I'd like to be... Can't even trace it. We're in a marginal position by nature. We're very tiny. We're very tiny. And so we can be captured by illusion when we don't look toward the Supreme. When we look toward the Supreme, the connection is there and we're okay. If we look away from the Supreme, we're disconnected and we get covered. Something like my hand. When it's like this, the palm is in the light. Like that, at once in the darkness. It can go either way. We're in that sort of position. That's the sort of creatures that we are spiritually. We're marginal. We're very tiny. And we can go this way or that way. But for those of us who go that way, the rescue squad is there. Mm. And the material world is there for those of us who want to go that way. Okay, it's there for us. But it's not a happy place.
I cannot really get the connection between the spiritual world and the material world. This whole idea that you need a prison.
It's not needed. It's not needed. Or another example. Let's take a drink. You know, martini. Martini is not really needed. Not good for your liver. Certainly not good for your driving. Not good for your breath. Not good for your mind. Not at all needed. But someone imagines, I need a martini. The need is imaginary. But imagined needs become powerful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me test it around. Why is it allowed to have needs?
Why
is it allowed to have needs?
Why are we allowed?
Yeah.
Well, you can look at it this way. The Supreme is supremely independent. That means every choice is open to you. And we're parts of the Supreme, but tiny parts. So we have a little tiny independence also. Just as the drop of seawater will also have a little bit of salt, a little bit of water. So the tiny drop, tiny particle of the Supreme will also have tiny independence built in. Independence means you have to be free to misuse it.
Why can't we just that allows that free will, and that would just be so much simpler.
Yeah, make that so much easier. But that's the way we're built. That we've got independence built in. We're not just robots. You know, you got to do this. You got to do that. There's freedom there. But freedom means risk. So for those of us who misuse our freedom, the rescue squad is there. Mm-hmm.
A question related to this question, I think, what is the purpose of material creation?
Is that your question?
No, I think it's related.
It's a related question. Yeah. Purpose is twofold. One is, you want to enjoy? Here. It's not actually possible to enjoy separately from the truth, separately from the Supreme. But for those of us who want to imagine that we can do it, it's there. The illusion that we can do it is there. Like a child, a little child is crying, I want the moon, I want the moon. You can't have the moon, I want the moon. So the mother is very intelligent. She takes out her little mirror and gives it to the child. See, now you have the, I have the moon, I have the moon. And what kind of moon does he have? But he's now he's happy, he's got the moon. Or at least he's imagining that. All he has is the reflection. But he's thinking, at least for a while, I've got it. So we want to be independent of the Supreme, to do whatever we want, to enjoy. So we're given the setup. We're all right. How would you like to enjoy? Well, I'd like to be able to fly with my eyes closed and use my radar. Okay. Be a bat. I'd like to have be able to run real fast and be the flashiest dresser in town. Okay, be a zebra. I'd like to be able to sing and fly in the sky. Okay. Be a bird.
I think following this train of thought, everybody would be a god because everybody at some point wants to do everything. So they would get reborn as a god and do everything. They wouldn't be here.
Yeah, everybody
wants just this.
Oh, to be born as God?
Everyone would be a god, because everyone has that desire to be great.
And we are. Everyone is a god. Everyone's a god here. Someone's Alexander, you know, he's controlling empires. And someone's the chief garbage man. And he's giving orders. Hey, guys. Huh? Everybody's a god here. That's exactly it. That everybody would be God. That's the name of the project. We're all in the God project. Every one of us is going to be
it's
a
like
God.
A
yeah, we're like little, you know, little cuckoo gods. Because we don't want to serve God. We want to be God. So, all right, we're given the illusion. Here, you want to be God? What would you like to be? Alexander, chief garbage man, president of the United States...
God needs somebody to serve him.
God needs somebody to serve him, yes. So we get a servant. Either we get a husband or a wife, or we get...
No, but that's a like serious question.
He meant about the real God.
Yes.
The real God needs servants.
What God are you talking about?
Is that what you meant?
Yes.
No, God.
He's really trying to understand, you know?
It's not that he needs, it's his natural position to have servants. Just as it's the natural position of the body to have hands that serve the whole body. Mm-hmm. It's not that the body is some sort of, you know, I want hands. It's naturally has hands. And the hands and the legs serve the whole body. But God naturally has parts that serve him. And we're among those parts.
So we're coming back to the original question that possibly this is needed. Possibly the universe or material.
It is needed for those of us who want to be independent.
No, is it needed for us or is it needed for God?
God doesn't need it. God needs it for you.
For us.
Yeah, the government doesn't need the prison except for those who want to act in such a way that they need to live there. God doesn't need the material world. He has his own world. He doesn't need this one. He's got a better one. Mm-hmm. But for those who want to be God, like God, this world is here. That's one purpose. How would you like to enjoy? How would you like to control? This is actually what the project is. I want to enjoy, and I want to control. So, you know, if I don't have some people under me to control, I get a pet. Sit. I get a little dog. Sit. I said sit. Good dog. Yeah, I'm in charge. that's one part. The other part is that this world provides the opportunity for getting out. Where is that opportunity? In human life. The animals don't inquire about spiritual understanding. Human beings have that opportunity. The human life is the opportunity for reviving our spiritual consciousness and going to the better world, to the permanent world, to the real world. So twofold, to enjoy, but to get free from illusion. Yeah?
You said something about, you said ignorance and then passion and goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, everyone throughout your life goes through stages as you get older. You start off as a kid and you're passionate and you have ignorance, and then as you get older, you become more good, I guess. So is it at the point where you die that it determines where you go in life?
Yeah.
So, if you're let's say you're eight and you die and you still have ignorance in you and you still have passion and a little bit of good, does that mean that you're going to decline, or what is that? How
yeah.
does that work?
It's, well, let's take one thing at a time. It's, first of all, not, of course, we all start off pretty ignorant, but it's not that we all end up real good.
Yeah.
Stalin didn't end up real good. So it's what we pick up. Some of us become very good, some of us become very passionate, some become, so it's, and yes, according to what we've picked up, whether we're 8 or we're 80, our next destination is there.
So it's at the end
point. At the end. Everything's tested in the final exam.
So it's not like when you're 20 years old and you're ignorant and now you're 80. It's not like that when you're 20. It's going to affect where you are when you're 80.
Well, where you are when you're 20 affects where you're going to be when you're 80, doesn't it? You know, like what you do in high school has an effect on what you do in college. That has an effect on what you do when you graduate. So your whole life, everything has an effect on everything else. And then the whole row of figures is summed up at the end. But you have that much time to direct which way you're going to go. You can go toward goodness, you can go toward, or you can go beyond all these three qualities. We didn't talk about that. But those who come to the spiritual platform go beyond even goodness. They come to the spiritual, uncontaminated stage.
I have two questions.
Sure.
The first one is a demon basically a soul who's just super in the dullness, or is a demon something completely different from...
Demons. The demons are discussed in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. They're not, the kinds of... It's not like... red bodies and horns and tails and so on. Generally, they take high positions in political circles. They're living beings like us who've acquired strong contamination by the modes of passion and ignorance. Who have developed the qualities of viciousness, of anger, of arrogance, of impudence, of dumbo, darbo, abhiman, pride, these things. The Bhagavad Gita says that there are those who have divine qualities, qualities of goodness, compassion, knowledge, and so on. And there are those of the demonic nature, vicious, nasty, filthy. They'll do anything for power and sense gratification. They're living beings like us. Just, they've become contaminated by those lower qualities.
And my second question is, I would like to hear your opinion on physical intimate connection between man and woman, whether that's always something that will bring you down to the realm of matter, or if that's something that can be used to achieve the goodness and surpass goodness.
Mm. That's discussed in the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna says, dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamosmu. Generally, that intimacy brings us into material consciousness because it's so much about the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so it reinforces the false sense of who I am. The sense that I am this body and this is mine. But dharma viruddha bhuteshu, by following, but when that physical intimacy is directed toward spiritual service, then it also has value. It also has, can be accepted on the path of advancement, of upliftment. Those who are on the path of yoga, they may engage in physical intimacy. Their purpose is, especially they'll have children who they can free from material existence,
mm-hmm.
by teaching them, by training them. That sort of purposefulness, higher purpose. Yes?
I have two questions too.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is there a difference by thinking that there is that there is karma who gives you, let's say, your next body, and by thinking that there is a God that judges you and then gives you another body? I mean, the result is quite the same, but it's a different process.
Let's see if I understand your question. That on one side the idea is that karma gets me my next body, or on the other side the idea that God...
There is a judgment.
There's
the
judgment,
second.
Yeah.
And in the first one, there is also a judgment, karma, that works with judgment, a kind of judgment.
According to the Bhagavad Gita, God is there, but he doesn't waste his time getting into, you know, sitting in judgment of every bird and
human.
Bus driver and so on. He doesn't, it's too much. Doesn't want to waste his time with that. Even in government, the president doesn't decide everything. He doesn't decide which policeman is going to go to which street for how many hours. He delegates. And then he spends his time enjoying the taxpayers' money. So, from the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that Krishna doesn't do everything. It's said, "Natasya karyam karanam chavidyate." God has nothing to do. His energies do everything. His energies do everything automatically. Material energy. God doesn't have to. You know, when I was a kid, I used to think God, if there's some idea of God, that he's sitting on a throne someplace, either pressing buttons or pulling levers or pulling strings. God doesn't have to do that sort of stuff. His energies are doing all of it. His energies are working in the material world. His energies are working in the spiritual world. So the laws of karma are delegated. It's not his business. But he's behind it all. Behind the government, the president is there. Behind the workings of the company, the chief executive officer is there. Without him, business stops. But he doesn't personally have to sign every check, stamp every piece of paper. He has his agents who do all of that.
Okay. And my second question is, let's say, what should an animal do in order to reincarnate as a human? Because we're talking about only about the other side.
You can tell him, but he won't listen. That's the misfortune of being an animal. You can tell the animal, sir, do you realize what's going to happen to you? Wouldn't it be better if you... It doesn't have the intelligence for it. So the animals just automatically advance one tiny step at a time. Because they never do anything wrong, either. You never see a tiger stealing oranges. They act exactly according to their nature. We're the ones who go against what's actually human nature. Because we have more freedom than the animals do.
So it's automatic.
We can misuse it. The animals never misuse it because they don't have the choice.
And plants too.
Plants, birds, fish. They just act according to what nature tells them to do. So then gradually they're elevated till they get here. Then in the human life you can go up or you can go down. Yes.
Okay, I'm confused on this part. So it's my understanding that it's a blessing to be born a human. It means you've advanced. So then, if you go backwards, say you live in ignorance, you know, and you go back. So then you go back to animal form. So you stay. How can you go back? Do you know what I mean? I mean, if it's a blessing to have come this far, and then you go back.
Well, what happens when you misuse your blessings?
And so then do you
your dad gives you a new car because you're such a, you know, you're his favorite daughter, and then you misuse it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, and then it's taken away.
That's taken away.
So then you go back until you're ready.
Yeah,
to
then
come
you
back
have to go through gradually. You know, it's such. Therefore, it's said. You know, we don't realize it. We don't think about it. But what we've got here in this human birth, how rare it is to get it, and how crucial it is for what happens.
Is there any kind of mercy of God or something that an animal can move up faster?
That's also there sometimes. If someone who's a yogi or devotee of God can be kind to the animals and give them like a boost. There's some, you know, if you're chanting, you're doing this mantra meditation. There's an animal hearing, you know, little spiders in the wall. They're making extra advancement. Yeah, they're hearing also. So you're benefiting not only yourself, but even those little spiders. Yes?
Is there any sense of individuality in the Supreme? I mean, without my body, without my mind? What makes me different from someone else or God?
Just like without my shirt and without my coat, it's not that I'm nothing. You know, my shirt gives me individuality because it's made by Arrow Company or because it says, you know, New York City on it or something, and my coat. But that's not my real identity. You know, my real body is underneath the shirt and coat. But if you peel away the body, you peel away even the material mind, then your real individuality is there. It's not that we're dependent on physical embodiment to be individuals. Rather, this is covering our individuality. Our real individuality is better than this. Is that okay?
Yeah, imagine that, because according to other philosophies, there are no individual souls. So what does Bhagavad Gita says about that?
Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna says, there was never a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all the kings and princes assembled on this battlefield. And never will there be a time when we'll cease to exist. That means eternal individuality. Yes?
What is the significance of vegetarianism for a spiritual...
Significance of?
Vegetarianism for a spiritual researcher.
Vegetarianism means eating in goodness. There's food also that's in goodness and passion, You know, all the food that's super hot, super salty, super sour, super sweet. That's super passionate. And food that's like rotten, stale, and full of blood, it's ignorance. And food that's healthy, fresh, naturally sweet, tasty. That's in the mode of goodness. So the vegetarian diet is in the mode of goodness. Otherwise, food offered to the Supreme is beyond the three modes. That's called prasad. So the yogis, there they go for that. Not only vegetarian food, but food that they've offered to the Supreme. And of course, what they offer to the Supreme is not the ignorant stuff, the smelly, rotten food books.
A couple of questions that came up from first, just in the individuality in the spiritual realm, is there a male or female or masculine or anything?
Yeah.
Okay. And so when someone is born and they're, you know how you hear people who are like, when I get sex change operations, right?
Yeah.
Is that their soul? That's like, oh, I'm a man trapped in a woman or whatever. No, that's still on the material platform?
That's still the material platform. Okay. Yeah. Gender dysphobia, it's called. It's very interesting, actually, because when you have the idea of reincarnation, you can start to get a deeper insight into that sort of issue. Person says, you know, he's in a man's body, you know, but I just don't feel like a man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a woman.
So that's still attachment to
previous life. You probably was.
Okay.
And he just hasn't gotten over it.
Okay.
So that, and maybe next life he will be. You know, that's the real sex change operation.
The other question, I wanted you to talk, please, sorry to interrupt, about Dharma, because, you know, when we're in yoga classes, sometimes we hear so many ideas, you know, or so many sort of, that, for example, even you're saying this world is for enjoyment, so you hear sometimes, you know, enjoy or be in the here and now, but somehow that seems to imply the here and now is on, you know, sometimes it seems to me that it's referring to the material on a material level or whatever. And then even in the concept of Dharma, it seems to be taken in a material context of, oh, like your purpose, your individual purpose in terms of, I don't know, I guess